Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefrey, and this is episode number 277. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Iron Grip, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the product and the people. And Craig Sowers and the gang at Iron Grip do a fantastic job. I've put their product in every weight room that I've been in. And I think it's fantastic. So if you're in the market, reach out to them. If not, please let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of this show. This week, I'm joined by Pete McLean. He's the head strength coach up at Ridgefield High School. Sorry about that. Ridgefield High School. And he came highly recommended to me for the work that he's done there. Close to how many years you've been there now, Pete?
17, coach.
17 years at the high school level, which we all know that's been, we're just now getting to a point where people are starting to recognize the importance of strength conditioning at the high school level, and you've been doing it for 17 years, so that's impressive. Man, I really appreciate you coming on the show.
You got it, Coach. It's great to meet you digitally.
Yeah, absolutely. Likewise. Well, Pete, you've been in this field for quite some time. I mean, 17 years there. You were in the fitness industry before that. I ran some basketball speed camps, I think, before that and whatnot. I usually ask, which experience best defines you as a coach? And you can definitely answer that. But, I mean, 30 years in this business, you've seen it all. You've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. What's your overall impression of strength and conditioning right now?
Well, I think since the advent of the internet, the industry's changed dramatically. I think that the wealth of information that's available and the ease in which strength coaches and fitness professionals are able to disseminate information has really kind of increased the level of proficiency. Back when I started in this, there was really very little information available to people who were looking to get into performance training or anything like that. And we had to kind of figure it out on our own. When I got out of school in the early 80s, the only information available was through bodybuilders, and maybe you'd read Muscle and Fitness magazine or you talk to guys in the gym, and that was really the only way that we were able to learn anything new, and as the internet became more prevalent and strength coaches were able to put information out, we were able to do literature searches, we were able to kind of poke around to find more cogent information. I think that the industry's kind of improved dramatically.
Right. I would echo that. I remember reading those Muscle and Fitness magazines and you save them and put them in the binders and whatnot. You're right. I mean, back, I'm not quite 30 years, but I'm up there. There's only one or two books, that you're able to read to get any kind of information. And now you're drinking it through a fire hose, and you have to have a great filtering system so that you
can absolutely
really pick out what's good, what's good and bad. When you've been working in this field for the number of years that you have, you're bound to make mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and how you've learned from it?
Well, I'll tell you, I was thinking about this when I read some of the program notes. I made so many mistakes along the way that I can't even count. I remember the first time an athlete, he was a track guy at University of Virginia, came up to me and said, "Hey, can you coach me?" And I said, "Sure." And then I walked away from him and said, "I have no idea how to coach this kid." I at that time, been working in like a Nautilus fitness club. That was what we had. The information that we were reading was all the propaganda that was coming out of D-Land, Florida with Arthur Jones. And so we went out, the two of us, and kind of made it up as we went along. I said to myself, a good way for me to coach track guys would be to find a way to put them under some sort of resistance training. But we didn't have any tools to do that. So I talked to a friend of mine going to the bike store, and I got a whole bunch of old bike inner tubes and tied them together and used those as my resistance bands. And I thought that was a pretty novel idea. I thought that was pretty cool. Until one day I was fooling around with one of the people I worked with, and they broke. And she went flying and got all banged up on the tarmac. And I kind of had to think a little bit and say, this is probably not a good way to do this.
Right.
But as far as other errors, I think initially one of the mistakes I made consistently was we programmed way too much aerobic conditioning into our programs with our athletes, you know, figuring that if we just went out and beat them up and ran them to death, that they were getting better and faster and stronger, when in reality what they were doing was just really getting more beat up. Right. So I think that looking back, I think that was one of the biggest mistakes that I made as a coach as I went through my career.
Yeah, I think we all made that mistake for sure. I love the bike inner tubes. That's, I haven't tried that one. I have to try that one for sure. You know, you've been working at the high school level specifically for 17 years, and I would imagine, you know, through the fitness industry and through these camps, you were working with a similar age group, you know, as well. But, you know, what, you know, right now the hot topic, right, is long-term athletic development, right? Yeah. What is your thoughts on long-term athletic development, and really, more importantly, the development of taking that freshman who's never maybe lifted a weight before in their life, and some of your athletes have gone on to great careers in college playing sports, and by the time they're a senior, they're a young man or young woman, you know, doing quite a bit of more advanced training. So what's your impressions, and then what, more importantly, is like, how have you – established a development system from that freshman to the senior year?
It's funny because I think that long-term athletic development has become kind of a catchphrase now. Everybody's using it. It's out. It's all over the place, and everyone's, you know, espousing their programs. But I think that you're a good strength coach and you understand the process and the developmental stages of these different kids, that you're doing that almost organically. You know, so we get our freshman kids coming in the summertime after they just come up from eighth grade. We start them on a very basic program. The two key components that we really, really focus on is their ability to move through athletic movements efficiently. So squat pattern, hinge pattern, press pattern, push pattern, pull pattern. We can start them at different levels based on their level of physical maturity. And also, I think there's an emotional maturity that comes into that also. So we may have one kid who has just started in his very like pre-pubescent period, while we have another kid who's basically through his puberty, and they're gonna have to start at different levels. But the one thing that I see that is seriously lacking within this age group are the ability to get knee flexion and hip flexion simultaneously. And secondarily, the ability to get any spine set or core set for any lifts, such as if you're going to teach them an RDL or a deadlift or really basically anything where they have to get into an athletic stance. So day one, athletic stance. We'll evaluate them. Can they get into that stance? Are they able to retract their shoulders so that they get scapular retraction? Are they able to get their hips back? Are they able to flex at the knee and the ankle? If they can't do that, well, then we have to start them in a really, really very rudimentary program. And then as we begin to progress through the next 4 years, obviously the scope of the exercise will change. Not so much an exercise selection, because if you're deadlifting at 12 years old, we're still deadlifting at 18 years old, but we're going to obviously be using a lot more weight and really, really trying to push them a little bit to get different type of results.
Right. Yeah, it's so important, I think, you know, when you're working at that level, that it's not about you, it's not about the numbers, it's not about what they might become. It's more about building a movement vocabulary.
Absolutely correct.
Getting that athlete, starting with that athletic position and learning how to flex their knees and their hips, and learn how to, you know, maintain a stable core and the whole deal. And I think it's so many times, you know, coaches at that level are quick to be, you know, to try to put up the 400-pound squat or the, you know, the, get the two plates on a bench press. And it's, I mean, that stuff comes if you do proper technique, proper function, you know, throughout. Rock, you know, strength training is not rocket science. It's just about progressive overload.
Yes, exactly. You know, and we talk about it all the time. It's just adhere to the process, stay with it, be consistent, and you know what, it'll all come. I think you may remember, you know, bigger, faster, stronger was like a big thing that was really, really being used at the high school level, say 15 or 18 years ago.
Right.
And one of the problems that coaches ran into was that it was very numbers driven. One of the things they're always looking for max numbers, what your maxes are. And I think what happens is you find that developmentally kids stall because they're never able to meet the numbers that were kind of published by either the protocol or that the coaches would expect. We don't really focus too much on max numbers. I don't think it's 100% necessary. I don't have any world-class powerlifters in my gym.
Right.
I do have a lot of athletes that move well. I have a lot of athletes that understand movement. And if they do decide to go to the next level, they're prepared to compete. And they're also prepared to compete in the weight room at the college level.
Yeah, you talk about movement and you spent quite a bit of time and you're known really, you know, really well for your speed development and movement development. What are some of the things that you're seeing being done wrong in the community when it comes to training for speed?
Two things that get to me when I see it being done is everybody's looking for the new quick fix, mousetrap, new idea. You'll go to some of those big box speed development programs, and I've even had some of my kids work out in some of these, and I ask these guys, what are you guys doing? And, you know, they're throwing agility ladders down on the ground, and the kids are working those fast speed drills, and, you know, they're cranking through these drills, but they're really not learning how to apply force, and they're not really learning how to get body positions correct so that they're able to move through space quickly. So that seems to be an issue. I have to break a lot of bad habits.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they come back to me, I'm like, look, you're not getting faster. Your feet are fast standing in place, but I defy you to find a sport where you have to move your feet up and down real quickly without moving.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more on that for sure. You know, being at the high school level, and one of the banes of my existence of being at the college or the pro level is the recruiting aspect of you know, of sport, you know, and you know, having a, you know, I have I'm a senior and a daughter, I have a son and a daughter that are seniors this year that have been recruited for lacrosse and wrestling. And I mean, the recruiting process, it's just such a bad deal. And then you got to deal with parents that are, that feel like their kids are the next, you know, whatever, Tom Brady or whoever. As a strength coach anymore, you have to balance that. You have to balance kind of the egos that come with getting 20 phone calls with the parents that feel like they maybe should be doing more or less or a certain thing. And how have you addressed that? What kind of advice would you give other high school strength coaches that are dealing with those pressures to be able to provide, you know, that solid program that you do up there?
I completely understand you. We're here up in Connecticut, which is absolutely a lacrosse hotbed. And I would probably tell you that 70% of my clientele are lacrosse athletes. Lacrosse culture is different. But in general, what you're finding is that these kids are being sold, in many cases, a bill of goods by their club coaches who were telling them that they're the next Division I superstar. And the problem is we get them out in our training environment. They're not strong. They're not particularly fast. And in many cases, they're getting bad advice from people who really shouldn't be giving them that advice, whether it be parents or club coaches or sport coaches. I think the most important thing is you need to be upfront with the parents, because those are the guys who are really kind of running the show. And I think you need to develop a pretty good degree of rapport with the parents so that they can trust you in taking their son or daughter through a longer-term athletic development program. Hopefully, we're getting these kids as freshmen and sophomores. Too many times I get kids in a absolute panic in late July who call me up and go, "Coach, you need to get me ready for college. I'm leaving in 3 weeks." I'm pretty good at what I do, but I'm not magic. And I'm like, look, if you have 3 weeks to go, you're in a heap of trouble right now, buddy. So I think that the most important thing is garner trust with the parents and make sure that you develop a rapport with both the kids and their parents, and in many cases, their coaches also.
You know, you've been, at the high school there for 17 years. And, like I said at the onset, it's just now getting to the point where most high schools feel like they should be getting high strength coaches, but they don't always have the funding for it. They don't always have the support for it. And, you had to fight when you started both the funds and the resources for what you do, but also the fact that it was even important, back 17 years ago.
Yep.
I often talk about, everybody complains in this profession about there's not enough jobs, there's not enough opportunities and things like that, but there's hundreds of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of high schools that exist where they could do something very similar to what you did, where you had your own business and you approached the school and said, I can provide a service, I can help. Give some advice to the strength coach that's listening to this, that's having a hard time finding a job maybe, that's a good coach that wants to approach their local high school about trying to get something going.
I do. I think the most important thing, you have to be willing to be poor. I think that although in many cases guys feel that they don't want to give away their knowledge and service and time, I think for many high schools, you might have to go on board as a volunteer coach. I think the other thing that really, really helped me here was being a sport coach and not just being a strength and conditioning guy. So what I did is I had a built-in clientele. So when I started coaching football here, I was volunteer. And I said to the head coach, look, why don't we try doing something different? Let's run a speed camp this summer. And we ran a 1 week speed camp, the varsity. And then I think we charged $50 a kid for the speed camp. So with 60 kids, that's a good amount of money. All of a sudden you're pretty good in that situation. And then the coach said, hey, this is something that we might want to consider doing. And he asked me if I would come on board as his conditioning guy. And then the year after that, I was brought onto the staff full time.
Right.
I think that the most important thing is, if you have to approach the coaching staffs, you have to, basically find a way to get into the school without putting too much of a financial onus on the administration. Most of the athletic departments do not have money for a full-time strength and conditioning coach.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the absolute right approach. I think, you got to go in there and show them with what the resources that they currently have, what they would gain. So if you could go coach a sport, get maybe one of the coaching stipends, teach phys ed or whatever. Now start a before and after school program, start a summer program, start whatever. And you can start to show your value as a strength coach. And eventually you start to reduce some of those other responsibilities to be able to do what you know and love. But being a physical education teacher or being a football coach or a track coach or a rugby coach makes you a better strength coach too.
For sure. I think that to be a really good strength and conditioning guy, I think you really need to understand the deep dynamics of whatever sport you're coaching. I know how hard it has been, I am coaching the field hockey team, in the weight room in the summertime. And I had to sit down with the girls and kind of figure out how that game is played. No one really understands the rules. Certainly I didn't. And so they sat down and I began to understand some dynamics of the sport. So that enabled me to be a little bit more efficient when I was designing their running programs in the summertime.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, man, this has been awesome. We end the show with some resources here. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
The best piece of coaching advice I ever received was that you don't know everything, so be prepared to not know stuff and be able to say, I don't know the answer to that question. And, have enough of an ego to understand that you might have to look some stuff up or find some resources to find the answers to questions, because there's no way to know everything. There's too much going on. I think that if you're humble that way, I think that you can find that, again, not only will you get smarter by learning stuff, but you'll also find that humbleness makes people trust you more.
Absolutely. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
The book that I'm reading right now that is awesome is Game Changer.
Yep.
And I loved it because from a football and rugby standpoint, it really gets into the crux of the little pieces of the game. One takeaway that I'm getting from the book is the author talks about space, finding space, or creating space, or closing space. And it's been a very big concept with me for many years, and it just reinforces what I've been teaching. But secondarily, now you're beginning to find these concepts in every game. So watching Monday Night Football or watching, a football game on a Sunday, you hear the announcers talking about finding space all of the time. That was something no one talked about 10 years ago. No one in football talked about finding space. So I think that what you find is that all of our field sports have some concepts that all kind of meld together. So that book has been really, really eye-opening to me. Love it. And it's a good read. It's a little bit dense, but I think we can work our way through it a little bit.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you the other website that I love reading, and every day it surprises me, is I read westsidebarbell.com.
Yep.
Because I think Louis Simmons is a dude. I listen to what he says, and it makes a lot of sense all the time.
Agreed. Any apps that you use?
Pardon me?
Any apps?
Yeah, the one that I use every day is Coach's Eye.
Yep.
It's really simple, and I use it all the time. There's nothing better than a visual feedback loop for your athletes than, if I tell a kid to flatten his back, he doesn't know what I'm talking about.
Right.
I show him on video 5 seconds after he performs the exercise. At that point, he's like, oh, now I get a coach. Oh, I get it. All right, I'm good. And they can usually fix their problem.
Great. Well, man, like I said earlier in the show, it's one thing, and it speaks volumes to the person you are, the coach that you are, that 17 years ago, you're like, man, I'm going to find a way, to make an impact on these young people. And, it's easier said than done. I think too many people in this profession, they get to a wall and they throw their hands up and they're like, I can't do anything. There's no job. There's no this.
Yep.
I mean, every step of your career, you found a way to impact young people and help them achieve their goals and mentor them along the way. And I know that, one of the people that one of the coaches that had recommended you for this podcast, his son trained with you, and you made most of an impact on him from a athletic perspective, but more importantly as a people perspective, and I think that's what we are in this profession to do, and you've done it at a high level for a long time.
Well, thank you, Coach. I think the one thing that that really kind of illustrates that I think we're doing the right thing is that in the summertime, I have between 30 and 40 alumni still training in this facility every afternoon. So the kids the kids who are playing sports at college want to come back here and train. So I guess we're doing something right.
That's awesome, man.
That's great.
Appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at rmckeefrey. on Facebook and YouTube at /Ron.McKeefery. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.